Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Rimebo. Jeff, how are you, mate?
I'm great. It is awesome right now. It's 3 degrees, but it's sunny.
It's officially spring now, Jeff.
That's what they tell me, but I think somebody ought to wake up the man upstairs and say, hey, let's push this thing forward, man. We got to get going. We got the draft coming. We got OTAs coming. We got free agency just winding up. We got all kind of things going on. We need to heat this up a little bit.
Absolutely. Spring has sprung, and things still going on in the NFL. So we're going to talk today. We're not going to do the state of the franchise again just for this week. We want to wrap up free agency. We want to take some of your questions in the mailbag. And, Jeff, I put out a little challenge to our followers on Twitter and our listeners. Last week, a gentleman sent in a wonderful shot of the beach in Australia where he was listening to the podcast. So I thought, well, we'll find out where people listen to us from. I'm going to read out a list of them later. And I want, in reverse order, we're going to give out a gold medal, silver and bronze. I want you to be head judge. And we're going to give away some prizes for these. But we do have a very, very dedicated bunch of listeners.
All right, I'm going to throw a protest flag right now. Right, I'm going to throw my yellow, my flag.
Challenge flag.
Because you got it, my challenge flag, because I got to stand up for all our listeners out in Polynesia, all of our listeners in Hawaii and Samoa and all out in Polynesia, because it's, I don't know, probably 2 o'clock in the morning right now when you're offering these prizes up. You got to realize that we have a global audience. So again, we may have to just take this under protest, Neil.
Well, I think we'll do it for today. I take your point on board, but I do have a lot of old junk sitting around my desk. So this is a competition that could keep on giving, Jeff.
Yeah, well, boy, isn't that Inside the Huddle? We never, never scrimp and save. We're always making it right.
I've got a pair of Miami Dolphins socks. I've got a Adrian Peterson Minnesota Vikings jersey. It's all good stuff. It's all great stuff. There's a Greg Jennings bobblehead with a broken leg. He's playing for the Packers in that as well. I mean, it's going to be high quality competition prizes. I mean, people probably shouldn't get their hopes up.
All I know is, do you still have Shaggy's head and the ball that you and Henry Hodgson used to throw around in the storage room at lunch while you guys were playing Field of Dreams in the storage room?
No, I think that one's gone. I did give away as well. I gave away my Colin Kaepernick bobblehead, so I haven't got that anymore.
You may have some fans here in Hamilton that are interested in that, because there's a little story with Colin Kaepernick and RG3 we need to get into today.
Ah, right. So this is we will get into that momentarily. Then we're also going to take your questions in the mailbag today, and we'll hear from the newest member of the Denver Broncos, British offensive tackle Menelik Watson. I caught up with Menelik, so we'll play you that interview as well today. But I saw you put on Twitter, Jeff, two former Pro Bowl quarterbacks are on your negotiation list. Please explain.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, free agency, you know, has ramifications both north and south of the border, because, you know, guys become free agents, things don't work for them. You know, again, everybody I'm sure saw that, you know, former Pro Bowler Vince Young signed in our league with Saskatchewan about 2 weeks ago. And he, you know, was a client of Lee Steinberg, our friend from Inside the Huddle. But we have put on our negotiation list, which reserves their rights to our team, with Colin Kaepernick and RG3. Now, it's interesting. Right now, we stand with Johnny Manziel, RG3, and Colin Kaepernick all on our negotiation list as quarterbacks. And I think that's actually...
yeah. Who does your character evaluation?
No. You say it's you're always just trying to find that guy, that one. So, but you know what? If you think about it, and these guys are at a point in their career where they're looking for an opportunity to prove that they can play. You know, this has been done numerous times. You know, Ricky Williams came up here and played a year and then went back to the NFL. You know, Doug Flutie revitalized his career up here and, you know, went back and played for both the Bills and San Diego at the end of his career. It's been done numerous times. And, you know, again, it's a closer and closer tie all the time because you see players going back and forth from the leagues. You know, there are a number of guys now in the last couple of years that have made significant careers for themselves, Khalil Mack being one of those guys, you know, Delvin Bro being another one of those guys, starting their career up here, going back there, and then again the same way, starting their career down there, coming back up here, and then going back down. So there's movement, more and more movement across the border, and I think, you know, again, when you look at those guys, each of those guys has that, you know, unique skill set, that ability to scramble and move around, and you know, I think that this game, it's intriguing to think about those guys on this field and, you know, with our rules.
I had that question, Jeff, because I don't want to influence you on Mr. Kaepernick, and
Neil, if you get a call from our personnel department,
well, I was going to. I don't think you'd listen to me anyway. I mean, you spend hours not listening to me on a Sunday night, so why would you start now?
I just wanted you to know that you know, when we do all of our. You know, personnel work. We dig through everything. We're trying to, you know, find those secrets, all those secrets out there. I forbade them from listening to your evaluation of Kaepernick.
I need to send you an email. But I do have this question from Jack Humphrey, and you've touched on it a little bit there. But your thoughts, Jack Humphrey asks, your thoughts on Kaepernick and RG3 to the CFL. Are they good fits? If they are, why? Is it because it's a more open field, and, you know, if they start taking off running, would they be good fits, Jeff?
Well, I think there's a chance. You know, again, there have been situations, you know, where those guys have come up here, and people thought, you know, that, wow, that guy's just going to tear the league up. And they struggled because, again, there are some nuances to the game, the motion, the 12th man, all of those things. But, anytime you've got an athletic guy on this field, again, just so the fans have a sense, if they've never seen a CFL field, our field is 13.5 yards wider than the NFL field, and it's 10 yards longer goal line to goal line, and then the end zones are 20 yards deep. So it's a huge field, right? And one of the things that is enticing about those kinds of quarterbacks is the fact that, you know, it's very, very difficult to defend a guy who can beat you both with his legs and with his arm. And if you look at those players, every one of those players, Johnny Manziel, Colin Kaepernick, and RG3 certainly are at their best or have been at their best when they've been given the opportunity to move and not be, quote, pocket passers. Now, they're going to have to throw out of the pocket in every league, and again, accuracy has been an issue for all of those guys, so that's an area they have to, you know, obviously prove they can do it. But you think about the dynamic ability of those guys on the run in this league. I think it's fascinating.
Jeff, well, let's talk about Colin Kaepernick, just because it carries on naturally. It wasn't going to be my first topic here, but it does carry on. No, and it does, but it does carry on because, you know, he's still going to want to explore the NFL. And at the moment, it has been nothing but tumbleweeds and not even an inquiry of Colin Kaepernick as a backup quarterback. Now, it could just be that the league sees him as a backup, and so therefore that market plays out a little bit slower than it does for starters. But we're seeing E.J. Manuel sign with the Oakland Raiders. We've seen Kellen Moore re-sign with the Dallas Cowboys. Brian Hoyer to San Francisco. Mike Glennon to Chicago. Josh McCown from the Giants to the Jets. Geno Smith from the Jets to the Giants. Jeff, I mean, we don't need to go over old ground. I'm not the hugest of Colin Kaepernick fans, but there were times last year when he was a good player on a bad team. Spike Lee has come out and said that there's skullduggery and something fishy going on. Is this because of Colin Kaepernick's political stance that he took last year, kneeling for the national anthems, or is this the NFL seeing a limited quarterback who, for a number of seasons, has been in regression? This is an interesting one. See how it's going to play out.
Yeah, it is. And I think, to be flat honest with you, it's a combination of all of those things. You know, you got to, and we just touched on it a second ago, but you got to understand when you sign a player, you take into account everything about that player. And that includes what he does off the field. That includes how he handles himself on the field. You know, when you get a guy like this who's made a very strong political stance, you take on all of that player. Just, you know.
Especially that position, right?
Well, particularly that position, because it's the most visible position, you know, in the game. And, you know, a couple years ago when the young kid from came out of Missouri and was drafted by the Rams, and, you know, his sexual preference was different than most NFL players, and that became a big deal. And what you ended up getting was not only the player, you got all of that stuff that came with it. Now teams have to make a decision whether that player is worth the positive and negative that you get when you take them on. And, you know, again, that's for everybody. That's a guy, whether he's made a political stance, a guy about his personal lifestyle, a guy about his, you know, past in terms of, you know, has he been in trouble, all of it fits into the equation. And so when you're a guy that's not productive on the field, and let's be honest, he has regressed from his, you know, taking a team to the Super Bowl those days to, you know, last year struggling and you know, not be losing his starting job to a guy that really, you know, is really just a vagabond NFL quarterback. And then he makes the political statements, and, you know, that was insightful for a number of reasons to a number of people in the league. Now, is he being banned because of that? No, because I'll tell you what, if he was throwing touchdown passes and, you know, there would be no shortage of suitors lined up at his door. But the fact of the matter is, you combine that with the player who's regressed, and, you know, it's like you say. I don't know, Neil, if it's as dire as you make it out when you say tumbleweeds going by his agent's door, but I do think that there's a very, very, very cautious approach to, you know, this player in particular. Well, just like there is with RG3, because you're going to get, you know, you get all of that stuff. You get the guy that was once a Pro Bowler, you get the guy that was hurt, and you get the guy that there's questions about his leadership.
I mean, it's the same with Jay Cutler, Jeff, and you know, it's a relative term. It's relative tumbleweeds compared to some others. I mean, would EJ Manuel,
right, you're right,
name recognition wise, you wouldn't be seeing EJ Manuel being signed ahead of Jay Cutler. And I think it's probably the same thing. There are, you know, you mentioned it last week. How many coaches has Jay Cutler got fired, or certainly how many coaches have seen Jay Cutler think they can fix him and don't? And whatever the body language or whatever it is, you combine that with the poor play, then that's where it's like almost a perfect storm for these guys. But I do think with Kaepernick, Jeff, some of it has to be that kind of political stuff, and like you said, it's the face of the franchise, so it is difficult. But he's better than EJ Manuel, he's better than Geno Smith, you know. But obviously they're looking at the bigger picture, and I go back to some of the stuff Thomas Davis once told me when I sat and interviewed him. The better guy you are in the locker room, the more reliable you are, and the more the team see you as a kind of good soldier, the more chances you get. Maybe the league doesn't view Kaepernick as being that.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a great lesson in all of this to young players, if they'll take the lesson, right? You can put yourself out there. You can do whatever you want to do, right? You can do whatever you choose to do. But just understand that what you do and what you say and how you live your life and all of those things are going to be evaluated. And there comes a point, and Coach Vermeil used to say this all the time, where your talent only keeps you in the league for so long. And if you can't manage your life, or you choose to do things that are, you know, that are viewed as controversial, or however you choose to say it, then you got to understand that's going to be factored into your evaluation. Now, again, it's real easy to use the race card here on this thing, but I don't see it as a racial thing, because, you know, I see it as...
Still been a poor player, hasn't he, for the last few years?
Yeah, well, again, you got to look at where he's gone. He's gone backwards. And, again, where has RG3 gone? He's gone backwards, right? Where has Jay Cutler gone? He's gone backwards. You know, again, when you look at those three guys, I think that's and the fact that they're going to expect, because of where they've been, they're going to expect, you know, money. I mean, look at Geno. You talk about Geno Smith. Look at Geno Smith's deal with the Giants. It's 1 year. It's $2 million. That's a pittance for a quarterback, for a backup quarterback. How much are some of the backup quarterbacks in the NFL making right now?
Yeah, well, Daniel was on about $8 million a year before he got cut loose by the Philadelphia Eagles. And Josh McCown just signed for the Jets, 1 year, $6 million. Again, maybe they trust him a little bit more, you know? I mean, it's that's a 37-year-old player.
I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, if this is the interesting part about it. McCown is how old? Geno Smith is how old? McCown has been with how many teams? Geno Smith was a first-round draft choice. And E.J. Manuel, first-round draft choice. There's two interesting guys to talk about because both of them had to find different work after their rookie contract with the team that drafted them in the first round. You know, you think about the Bills. The Bills have nobody on their football team right now who was a part of that 2013 draft class. That's scary.
That's bad. That sets you back, doesn't it, that kind of stuff, Jeff? And we'll talk about that more as you go into the draft, as we get closer to the draft at the end of April in Philadelphia. But that kind of hitting and missing sets you back. And I think it's also, you know, when you look at teams like Jacksonville as well, Jeff, you know, at some point, you want Miles Jack to step up. You want Dante Fowler Jr. to step up so you don't have to keep dipping into free agency and supplementing things that don't seem to happen in the draft. Drafting is so important.
Oh, man. And because you think about it now, Neil, the way the draft works now, with the way players are slotted, that those guys that you get on that rookie contract, when you have success with those guys, those are the guys that allow you to go out and spend the money for the higher price free agents to hopefully fill just a spot or two on your football team. You can't miss on those rookie contract guys, and now you're trying to fill spots, too many holes, yeah. And it gets too expensive, and then you can't do it inside the cap. You know, there's so much going on right now that is so fascinating in the league, you know, and you know, fans really, if they'll hang with us and they'll listen every week, you're really going to get a feel for how this whole thing shapes up, and it's not, I say this all the time, it's not just collecting football cards. There's a lot to this.
Yeah, you could, if you don't hit on a first-round draft pick who's a corner, Jeffrey, you could get 4 years, about $20 million. You might end up buying one in free agency for 4 years, $50 million, you know?
That's what I'm talking about. And, you know, you got that guy that doesn't work for you, and that's in essence dead money. When you've got a guy that you pay all that money for, and then he doesn't work out, and now you got to go out and fill that spot. Well, if you fill it with a veteran, you're filling it with a much bigger contract. And that, to me, is the key to managing the cap well, is you have to backfill for every one of those big money guys that you bring in, whether it's one of your own that you kept in his second and third contracts, or it's one you brought into your football team. You've got to backfill with rookie contracts, or you can't make it inside the cap. And we've seen that happen numerous times with numerous teams that were real close to being a Super Bowl team and then just fell off the face of the earth because they couldn't, the cap got them.
We talked about quarterbacks there, Jeff. Let's talk about a couple of running backs, some news that relates to running backs. Adrian Peterson, of course, made that visit to the Seattle Seahawks. It's the only visit he's taken so far, but the Seahawks signed Eddie Lacy instead. So Eddie Lacy goes to the Pacific Northwest. Apparently, Jeff, on one of his free agent visits, and I suspect it was in Green Bay because they wouldn't be adverse to telling us all that Eddie was out of shape, he apparently tipped the scales at 267 pounds, Jeff. Pete Carroll has said, I want him big, but I don't know if he wants him that big. So I'm going to steal this one from a follower of mine on Twitter, Jeff. I think his name was Joshua last week, who said, is this going to be beast mode or is it going to be feast mode?
There are only two words that are keeping Eddie Lacy from being a Pro Bowl back, Neil. Only two words.
I know where you're going. Go on.
I'm full.
That's so wrong. So true. But Jeff, this is a guy who looked like a guard at times when he was running. I mean, that game against Arizona a couple of years ago, never has a huge run been so embarrassing for one player. When he broke free against the Arizona Cardinals and was measured as running slower than Peyton Manning in the same playoff series, you know, I just don't know with Eddie Lacy. This is, and you say it quite often, there's, sometimes there's players where you're going to have to show me now because I don't, the trust has gone. You're going to have to show me before I believe again. And that's where I am with Eddie Lacy. Now, Pete Carroll likes big backs, but, you know, there's big and then there's out of shape. We don't know, you know, which Eddie's going to turn up at the moment.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember that play explicitly because as the ball was snapped, I stepped out from behind the desk to go use the washroom, came back and watched the end of the play.
Picked up a coffee on the way back.
That was bad. I mean, that was bad football. And, you know, I just, and this is partly me, Neil, because I got a thing about fat guys. I just don't like fat football players. And when you're a running back and you look the way he looks, and, you know, again, to me, and again, I hope for the guy that he goes out there and he can manage himself. But I mean, here's a guy that's been told how many times he has to come in a certain way. Here's a guy that's been, you know, basically begged by the franchise to get himself in shape and become the guy that we thought you were going to be when we drafted you. And again, can't discipline himself enough to take care of his weight. I don't want that guy. I that's just too many. I mean, yeah, there's a plus side to him if he's not plus-sized.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
saying?
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, it's a head-scratcher for me from Seattle's point of view because unless they don't trust Thomas Rawls and CJ Procise to stay healthy, because I saw with Rawls in the playoffs when he went for over 260 yards in that playoff game against Detroit, I saw a guy who could provide the emotional spark, provide the power running. Then you've got Procise out the backfield. It's a good draft for running backs by all accounts. They're kicking the tires on every veteran running back. They had Jamal Charles, they had Adrian Peterson, they had Eddie Lacy up there. It must be something where Pete Carroll is saying, I need a veteran presence. But then, if you need a veteran presence, that's to show the young guys the way. Eddie Lacy, Jeff, to me, and I'm only looking at it from the outside, would not be the guy to show others the way.
Nope. I mean, not to me. Not unless it's the weight of the refrigerator. I mean, show him the way to the dessert line at the cafeteria. He probably got that one figured out.
Yeah,
but
No, it's just,
you know, again, you understand what I'm saying? I just don't. Why?
Well, it's a trust issue, isn't it, Jeff? As a coach, you want to trust that a player is going to come in and be a professional and be in shape. Mike McCarthy got frustrated by Eddie Lacy to the point where he called him out in the media, and coaches don't often do that. You're quite protective of your players.
Yeah, and again, you, this is the guy you drafted, right? This is your choice. So when you criticize the player, you're criticizing your choice. But I think they just got to the point with him in Green Bay where, you know, you can counsel him, you can talk to him, you can threaten him, you can fine him, you can do all. And if they still don't get it, then they probably just don't get it. Or it's not, you know, again, like Coach used to say all the time, it's just not important enough to you. Now, can Seattle unlock that? Well, I'm sure they look at it as it's a worthwhile gamble. But there sure seems to me a lot of draftable running backs that, you know, are a much less of a risk than a veteran who can't, you know, who can't manage his weight. And again, I'm just not a big fan of the move. I hope it works out for the player, and I hope it works out for the Seahawks. But, you know, again, I think for the Packers, it's addition by subtraction.
Jeff, there's a lot of that goes on around the NFL, isn't there? Thinking you can fix a player. I mean, you look at Seattle are going to think they can fix Luke Jokel, who didn't do anything on the offensive line for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Minnesota will think they can fix Mike Remmers. The Chargers think they can fix Russell Okung. I mean, I guess because you see the clay in terms of the player, and you think, well, it's got to be something there. You know, our coaches will get the best out of him, surely, and maybe that's what they're looking at here.
Yeah, I think there's a certain percentage of that because, number one, you're in an ego-driven business. I mean, you don't get in this business because you don't think you can unlock the secret to a player. And you weigh it and you look at it's a risk reward kind of thing, and you just say, okay, what's the risk? Okay, is it minimal enough from a financial standpoint that we can do it? Is the guy going to be a cancer in the locker room? I've never heard that about him.
No.
Or is he going to be a distraction or whatever? It's like I say, it's a risk reward kind of deal, and if you feel that the risk is less than the possible reward, then you go with the deal. And again, like I say, I don't want to sound like I'm an anti, Eddie Lacy guy or an anti Seahawk guy, because I'm not. I always want the player to succeed, and I always want to see a guy have a great career. He just got to prove it to me now, because how many times? I mean, it wasn't like the Packers. It wasn't like Mike McCarthy was ordered double cheese, double pepperoni, and having it delivered in his locker room every day.
No.
I mean, the guy's got to take care of himself. He's a pro.
Yeah, they were trying to help him out. The one guy that they're trying to replace, obviously, in Seattle with this big back is Marshawn Lynch. And, Jeff, this is interesting because Marshawn Lynch sounds like he wants to look at coming out of retirement, but only if he can play for the Raiders. Now, obviously, there's some technical stuff that needs to be done. Seattle either need to trade him to the Raiders or release him and do him a favor and let him go to Oakland, because clearly they've moved on from Marshawn Lynch, and Marshawn Lynch is now maybe tempted back. He's 31. His last 1,000-yard season was 2014. Do you see this happening? And if it does, is it a nice fantasy football headline, or can this guy still do it? I mean, how do we know?
What? I think it's intriguing to me. Here's a guy that is an Oakland kid, right? Grew up in Oakland, in the Bay Area, and it would be the perfect. I mean, he's a Raiders Raider. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a little bit of a throwback guy for that team. And what a great story if he could do it and come back out of retirement and have a year or two and be a spark for that football team. From everything, I talked to Michael Bennett and Maurice Kelly and those guys I know at the Seahawks. From everything I've ever heard about the guy, he's different than the guy he projects to the media.
Yes.
He's a great teammate. He's loved in the locker room. I mean, absolutely loved in the locker room. His coaches enjoy coaching him. Mm. He's incredibly smart. He gives you a persona that is different than maybe the guy that's inside, but is an absolute warrior on the field. Now, how much of that's left? Who knows? And people say, well, you're kicking the tires on a guy that's been out of football for a year. He hasn't been hit for a year, right?
Yeah.
If he's in shape, and all the words are that he's been working out, if he's in shape, then I think this is a great low-risk move for the Raiders, because here's but
the
it's interesting
line
how
as well,
it's,
Jeff.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, though, because there's two ways this can go, Neil. He can decide to come back out of retirement for the Seahawks. If he does that, the Seahawks would have to pay him $9 million next year. So they can't do that in the cap. So they'll have to cut him, right? And then he can go, once he's cut, he can do whatever he chooses. He's a free agent, what we call street free agent, right? So he could go to the Raiders by choice and negotiate his contract. Or he could get his rights could get traded to the Raiders for a draft pick. And what I'm hearing is this might only cost a fourth or fifth round pick.
It's worth the chance. And Raiders lost Latavius Murray, of course, to free agency to the Vikings. He may be just what the Raiders are looking for, Jeff, because at the owners' meetings in a couple of days' time, they're going to be talking about the Raiders and that potential move to Las Vegas. It won't be immediate, so they're going to have to play in limbo in Oakland, even if it happens. So what better to kind of boost the local fan base than to get Marshawn Lynch in?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's another part of the win of this whole deal. And, I think it's a great thing if it comes to fruition. And, and I'm putting my, Raiders fan club card away when I say that. I'm telling you, I think it's great. I think he's a great personality for the NFL.
Yes,
I think
I,
he's as goofy as he is, mm-hmm. you know, if you ever saw that thing that he did when he went to Scotland,
he's
priceless.
That was when we were doing our fan tours. He almost got killed. He almost got taken out by a bus pulling a wheelie on a bicycle, going down the road in Scotland. I mean, he is crazy. But actually, I remember back, Jeff, what you say about the locker room stuff, because when he left Seattle, it was a lot of the talk from the American media was like, okay, well, this now is Russell Wilson's team, and it kind of coincided with Russell Wilson taking off at the end of that 2015 season when Marshawn was out injured, and you know, there was all that talk of, oh, are they trying to put this team in Russell Wilson's hands? That's why they threw at the end of the Super Bowl, didn't give the ball to Marshawn, all that, blah, blah, blah. So it was all this kind of, in a roundabout way, saying that Marshawn Lynch had been a little bit of a hindrance in the locker room to Russell Wilson's development. But when we were in the studio with Evan Moore for one of our Sky productions, who was in that locker room with the Seahawks, with Marshawn Lynch, couldn't have spoke higher of him. Could not. Everyone who has ever been around the Seahawks, as you say, Michael Bennett, all of those guys, they say what a great character and player to have in the locker room.
Yeah, and that's why I say I think it's a great signing if they can pull it off, right? I mean, this would add something to the Raiders that they really need, that toughness, that ability to take, you know, you look at how the Raiders are built, right? They've got the ability to go over the top and score, you know, quickly, right? They've got a defense that's built to play from a lead, you know, with the edge pass rushers with Khalil Mack and those guys. And now what they could really use is that big, strong, physical, pounding back who can take the four-minute offense, put it on his shoulders, and close games out. That would be a huge plus, and that's what he does. That's the thing that he does better than anything else, is when you need a run, and it may not be a 25-yard or 30-yard run, but when you need that four or five to get you a first down and keep the clock moving, keep the chains going, that's the kind of back he is. And that spiritual benefit that he brings your team, just that competitive nastiness, that toughness, all of those things. And then you put on top of the fact that he's loved in the locker room. I mean, adored by his teammates because of his personality, because of goofiness. You know, that fun-loving character that he is, the guy, he's still the same kid that drove the golf cart around Cal after they had a big win as a college player. He's still that guy.
Oh, and for every 5-yard run that he gives you, Jeff, he gives you another 4 or 5 of those emotional bursts that are way more valuable than yards ever could be. That's what he did for Seattle time and time again.
Exactly, and not just for the fans, but for the offensive linemen, for the team, for all the guys down. It just isn't. When you have a back that can do that, that is such an emotional lift for your football team when you need it, when it's, you know, Frank Gans used to say, at those moments when man measures man, and that's when he's at his best.
So that could be one great running back coming out of retirement. We have to wonder if another great running back or two are heading into retirement. Still nothing for Jamal Charles or Adrian Peterson. And Jeff, I wonder with Adrian Peterson, is he losing money by the day? Because even if he doesn't retire, are we going to get down to the sort of $4 million per year range? Are we getting down to the $3 million? I mean, you just got to wonder why there's no market for this player, and or if teams are saying the longer we wait, because we're quite happy to have him on our team, and we're quite happy for him to be an addition to our team and complement our running game, but we want to do it at $2 million a year. I mean, first of all, do you think he would retire? Will there be a number where he's saying, I'm not going to play for that? I mean, what do you think the future holds for Adrian Peterson, the short-term future?
Well, that's a really difficult question to answer unless you're inside Adrian Peterson's head.
Sure.
But, you know, the reality of it is, Neil, everybody, what's that old quote, every man has his price? Well, that's really, really true. I mean, you think about it. He may just say, I'm not playing for, you know, again, whatever arbitrary number you want to pull out of the sky.
Sure.
Or he may say, I am a competitor. I am not going to go out the way I went out. I want one more shot at it. Now, think back to one of the greatest of all time, and that's Eric Dickerson.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you a little story about Eric. June is the head coach in Atlanta. Eric had gone to the Raiders, so Atlanta brings him in just to see if there's anything left in the tank. And they end up, they're having their last personnel meeting at the end of training camp, and I think it was Kenny Herrick, I can't remember who the GM was, says, well, we're going to cut Dickerson. June calls Eric that night and says, hey, listen, they're going to cut you tomorrow. You should really go out the way you want to go out. So Eric retires rather than get cut.
Yeah.
And that cemented their relationship for years and years and years. But every guy's got his own – the reason I tell that story because every guy's got his own choice about, you know, how it's going to happen when you're at that level of player, right? He could walk away and just say, I'm done. Thank you. It's been a great ride. I know I'm going to be a Hall of Famer. I'm going to get my gold jacket. Or he may say, no, I still think I can play. And the toughest thing for guys who've been superstars to say is, you know, my time has passed. And I think that's one of the things that he's got to be weighing right now and sitting down with his agent and his people and deciding what it is that he really wants to do. Because I could see this one going, Neil, past the draft.
Yes, I could see this going to June, Jeff, like we saw with Arian Foster last year.
I agree with you. I think this can go past the draft because teams are going to want to sit and say, okay, where are we, you know, in the Fournette sweepstakes, for example, or where are we in any of the – there are a number of really good backs in this draft. And so, you know, they may want to sit and see how it shakes down with the draft and then make decisions about where they are.
And, Jeff, that would be absolutely fine with Adrian Peterson because he doesn't have to go to any workouts in April or May. That's what I mean. The veteran players don't want to be doing that if they don't need to.
No, absolutely not. They don't want to be involved in those things if they don't have to be. And for him, particularly, as you mentioned, I think the last time we were on the show, Neil, that it's been his history that he does very, very little in OTAs, mini camps, and even training camp.
So Adrian Peterson is still on this, what is fascinating, free agent market. You've still got Colin Kaepernick out there, Jay Cutler's out there, Dontari Poe no longer out there. He signs with the Atlanta Falcons for a one-year deal. But let's stick with the free agency theme now and catch up with the newest member of the Denver Broncos. He signed a three-year deal to play offensive tackle. It's Britain's own Menelik Watson, and I caught up with him for the Inside the Huddle podcast. 4 years under your belt now, Menelik. You've played left tackle, you've played right tackle. I saw with the Broncos that you said you don't mind if you have to move inside or even play defensive back. I guess that kind of versatility has helped you out and makes you attractive to teams.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm still very much a piece of clay. You know, everyone knows I can do a right tackle. You know, it's really that by what I did at left tackle with 3 days of practice. You know, they still see, you know, the abilities there. For me, it's just about playing the game, honestly. It's not about this, that, and the fourth for titles and labels. They just want to play football. Mm. What I love to do. It's what I've always dreamed about, being an athlete and taking my job serious. So, yeah, you know, when I say, you know, I'm ready to play wherever the guys need me, I love playing tackle. You know, I love being on the island. I love being one-on-one. You know, but, you know, we're trying to win. You know, we're trying to win the Super Bowl. So, you know, if I need to play D-tackle, you know, like I said, you know, but, you know, I'm brought in to be a tackle, you know, be a dominant tackle like that. So, obviously, that's the focus and stuff like that. So, you know, just going in, being a sponge as usual, you know, trying to soak in as much as possible.
It was a good free agency period as well, Menelik, wasn't it, for yourself and for Jack? Jack Crawford gets a three-year deal in Atlanta, and we've got potentially more Brits coming through with a couple in the draft as well. It's exciting times.
Absolutely, no, it's very exciting time for us. You know, it's continuing to grow. I know there's, I know Jermaine Illumina will be drafted somewhere, so he'll be playing some NFL football. You know, and hopefully he'll be starting next year. You know, there's a lot of guys starting to, you know, take notice of the sport. It's continuing to grow. I think it's great for us. You know, I think growing up as a basketball kid, you know, wishing we could have bridged that gap a lot better. You know, from anyone to America, getting a couple more guys into the NBA, you know, and things like that. But, you know, it's funny enough that, you know, NFL is the one where, you know, we actually make it a real push, and we started to get these kids out here and get them taking it and enjoying it. So it's nice for me. It brings joy to me, to my eyes, to watch this, you know, watch this whole process unfold, and the growth of this thing, and manifesting into something that could be really special, you know. And you know, I'm excited for the young guys coming into the league, and the guys that are already in the league who are still out here putting themselves on the map and representing for the country. So it's an exciting time.
Yeah, I mean, it's exciting for you as you continue your own personal journey, Menelik, from long sight to the NFL, but you're also paving the way, and that's got to make you proud, surely.
Absolutely. You know, I'm always, you know, a guy who's reachable. You know, talk to some of the young guys coming into the draft this year. You know, I got to spend some time with Jermaine down at the NFL PA Bowl. And then I got to spend a night with him and just really just talking to him about the whole process and things like that. And, you know, get his mind right, you know, understanding that, you know, when you come in, obviously, you know, the world is really, you know, the NFL is everything. You make it, you know, the great thing about the NFL is you get a shot. You know, everyone gets a shot. If you're athletic enough, you're big enough, and you're nasty enough, you're going to get a shot. It's just what you do with that shot. We can get it, you know, and I think that's the beautiful thing about the NFL. You know, all you just need is this chance, you know, to prove yourself. You know, because, you know, in the NFL, it's not really about talent, really. It's about the guys willing to compete the hardest. You know, you might not be the fastest, you know, you might not be the biggest, but if you're willing to compete every single play, you know, there's definitely a spot for you. So I think that was just the biggest thing I've been trying to preach to these guys, especially Jermaine and coming in. So, you know, I mean, it's nice. You know, I don't think about it as such, but, you know, when I do actually sit down and think about it, you know, it's an incredible position to be in, to be an example, obviously. And you know, I just want these kids coming and just shine. I mean, I was just so proud of Jay Ajayi when I got to see him down at the Pro Bowl, man, and just told him, you know, I'm proud of him and, you know, at least do him, and just told him to continue to shine. You know, he continues to shine and everybody shines, and, you know, I'm so proud of what he's doing. Jack, I spoke to Jack after he signed with Atlanta, you know, and just told him I'm proud of him, and he knows me. You know, we've known each other since we were kids, so, you know, it goes without saying the love we have for each other. So, you know, I'm just happy, I'm just proud, and I just want to see more and more kids come out here and just continue to just follow the path of us and continue to just grow.
All right, Jeff, just wrapping up there on Menelik, it's good to see him get that second contract, because there have been times when he's been really, really good in Oakland, but then he has had some injuries as well. But clearly the Broncos have a nice sort of opinion and value on him.
Yeah, I think, you know, here's a young kid that's still developing, Neil. And I think what people have to, when you look at Menelik Watson, you have to remember, here's a kid who came over to the United States not to be a football player from England, but to be a basketball player, and boxed and did some other things. So really, he had a very, very, he's had a very, very short football life, if you will. And I think his best football is still in front of him. Now, again, he is a mauler. He's tough. He's strong. His challenge has been with the speed guys off the edge. Right now, it may be that he moves from right tackle into guard. You know, that may be where he fits. But he is a good young offensive lineman and a huge addition, in my opinion, for the Broncos, who want to run the football. And that's, you know, again, that's where he's at his best. Run the football, take pressure off those young quarterbacks. And, you know, I think it's a great signing for the Broncos, and it's a great opportunity for Menelik. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, me too. Congratulations to Menelik Watson. Right, Jeff, I'm going to read out some of the places that people have listened to our Inside the Huddle podcast. So this is only part one of our competition, because for the fans in the Pacific Oceans, we are going to do this again. But I'm going to give away some prizes. So I'm going to read a few out, Jeff. I want you to make a mental note of three that you like, okay?
All right,
so I'm just going to give... We had a great response, so I'm going to try and read as many as I can to the people. Ollie Haynes says, I listen at my desk at work. That's not going to get it done, Ollie. Simon Cardi says, I was listening just a
few... Whoa.
It doesn't say where he's working.
It depends where he's working.
Fair point, but he doesn't say. So I'm going to...
Okay, well, then he's done.
I'm going to assume nowhere glamorous. Simon Cardi says, I was outside the Burj Khalifa. That's the tallest building in the world, isn't it, in Dubai. listening a few days ago. So that's Simon Cardi in Dubai. Oh, this is a good one, Jeff. Mark Everson says, I was in Quinta do Lago in Portugal on an early morning walk. I only had Inside the Huddle on my phone and no phone service. I got lost and listened to the podcast on a loop for 4 hours. Mark, that is dedication. As I said, even Jeff doesn't listen to me for 4 hours, and he sits next to me for eight. This one is from Irish NFL fan who says, in a private car en route to the Great Wall of China, and we'll be doing so again in May. This is a nice one, Jeff. Oh, there's some strong ones here. Joseph Caulfield, who says, me and at EMMUFC listened to you guys at the Everest Base Camp last summer. It was so cold, but worth it. Let me read a few more. Chris Ritchie, inside MetLife Stadium prior to Giants Falcons. I like that. Freddie Farrell says, I drove through Dudley once and listened to the podcast. That is not going to get it done. Scott Coupleditch, on a 15-hour bus ride across Cambodia. Wow. Nice. Mark Salter, listened to it flying to New York last November for my first NFL game. A couple of the guys at work here. So DJ Premier, who's Martin Daniel, says, I listen while I'm at work in a factory producing yogurt. I also had it playing in one ear while the dentist got busy. Oh, brilliant. Peter Joy says, not exotic but beautiful. I listen to your podcast while walking my lab around Baggy Point in Croydon, Devon. That's a good one. I'll give us a few more, Jeff. Adrian Croft says, nothing exciting, just listen while being a postman down in Worthing. Well, we thank you for that, Adrian. James Green says, I'm presuming the 7:40 train from Flitwick to London St Pancras won't qualify. No, James, it won't. This one's good. At M3MZ0R. I wish we had a name for that one. He said, I listened to it at a friend's wedding in India. If that was actually during the wedding, that is brilliant. Sam Mendoza.
Especially if he's in the wedding party, then he's really got these he's hands down.
I reckon he was the groom, really. They asked him to say I do, and he said aloha. And finally, these two. Sam Mendoza listens in the toilets at work in Swindon. That's just filthy. And the Chorley Buccaneers, they listen in Blackburn. That's not going to get it done, but thank you for the Chorley Buccaneers. So, Jeff, I need a top three. Have you got a top three?
Oh, I have to go with Everest Base Camp, because that's, like, so cool. I can't even imagine that.
Yeah.
And 15 hours on a bus ride in Cambodia.
Yep.
Love it.
Then
my man who got lost in Portugal.
It's got to be, right?
Four hours of us, you're my guy.
All right, so I'm going to hand out prizes. So I'm going to reach out to our winners then, our Joseph Caulfield, who listened to us at Everest Base Camp last summer, Scott Coupleditch, who filled his 15-hour bus ride across Cambodia, and poor old Mark Everson, who listened to us on a loop for 4 hours. 4 hours of me and Jeff saying the same thing over and over again. Fair play to those. Congratulations, Jeff. It just goes to show just how great our listeners are.
and ever so slightly mental. To be honest with you, it's really actually the coolest thing ever that you did this, because it really just shows how awesome this whole thing is and how grateful we are to have such an amazing group of listeners. Now, wait till you get those Polynesians involved. Now, yeah, we got people in Navarre, Florida. We got all kind of people over here that are listening too. So it's a global phenomenon. I think it is the coolest thing happening.
All right, we want to keep those coming and see if we can find some more of those. Let's take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag. One from Sam, who says, have the Bucks done enough in free agency to go up another level? So they, obviously, a big signing of DeSean Jackson, Jeff, and then I think Chris Baker's a sneaky good signing a defensive line as well. I mean, the Bucks were, they weren't far away last year, were they? Late in the season, they had that big game against Dallas on Sunday night and couldn't quite get it done in Dallas, and meant they kind of just missed out on the playoffs.
Yeah, I think this is a team that's right on the cusp. And I think, as you mentioned, DeSean Jackson is the one that's fascinating to me, because the thing that they didn't, you know, they got the big guy in Evans. They got that big physical receiver that everybody wants. But the thing that they didn't have was the guy who could tear the lid off of it. And that's what DeSean Jackson brings. I think that's a great, great signing for, you know, Jameis Winston, who is a young quarterback that's shown he has a big enough arm. And I just really think that the Bucs have quietly, if you will, really put themselves in a position where they're going to make some noise now next year. I think they're going to be a good football team.
All right, last question, Jeff, is actually a little bit along the lines of what we've just done with the exotic places, because it comes from Greg Jackery, who says, I've just seen a Teddy Bridgewater jersey while skiing in La Plagne in the French Alps earlier today. Where is the most obscure place you've ever seen a jersey? I'll tell you this, Jeff. My wife, last Sunday, so not this Sunday just gone, the one before, she ran the North London half marathon. It was her first half marathon. It finished in Wembley Stadium. And she, I didn't see it, but she said that she followed around for a lot of the course a gentleman wearing a Frankfurt Galaxy top.
Is that
pretty,
right?
Wow. Pretty obscure place to see a Frankfurt Galaxy top in the North London half marathon. Have you ever seen an NFL jersey where you're like, wow, it's an NFL jersey?
Yeah, you know what? There's a place called Fangatoa in Samoa, and it is out in the jungle. And I remember going there, and there were kids. Now, this is a true story. There were kids playing football in their bare feet in front of the school. It was an elementary school, and maybe there were 150 kids in the school, and there were kids playing football with a coconut in their bare feet with NFL gear on, and I just thought that was the coolest thing. I can't remember whose jersey it was the little kid had, but yeah. I wanted to take a picture of it and send it to the guy
and
just say, hey, listen, if you don't think you make an impact, just think about this. Here's a kid in his bare feet with a coconut in the middle of the South Pacific, hours and hours of plane ride from anywhere, and he wants to be you. And that's really cool.
That's awesome. So that's a good place to end, Jeff, because we've been on this podcast, we've been to Samoa, the French Alps, the base camp of Everest. We've been to Dudley in Yorkshire, I think it is. And we've been all over the place. Brilliant.
It is awesome. It's growing.
It's still growing. All right, Dad. So this has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We will be back next week. We'll kick off our State of the Franchise stuff again, start looking at some of the teams now that free agency is beginning to die down. But as I said, still a few big names out there. Most of them, sounds like, are going to be heading up to play for Jeff in Canada. So until then, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.